You're listening to CJSF Radio, Simon Fraser, 90.1 FM.
You are listening to CJSF 90.1 FM on your dial, 93.9 Cable FM in Burnaby. And you are listening to Future Talk with your host, Dr. Paul Tenery, professional engineer, professional futurist, and sometimes occasional sessional instructor of future studies at Simon Fraser University. And this is a weekly show that looks at future trends and issues and important items that affect your daily life and will be affecting your life into the future. Welcome to the show. We're continuing our look at the book Multipliers, How the Best Leaders Make Everyone Smarter by Liz Wiseman with Greg McKinnon and a foreword by Stephen Covey. So we're still looking at the foreword of the book. What Stephen Covey loves about this book. I admire the work and insight of this book for several reasons. For the journalistic integrity and sheer tenacity required to analyze over 150 executives across the Americas, Europe, Asia, and Africa. The book is full of rich and vivid examples gathered from all over the world. Second, for the way this book focuses on just those few things that really differentiate intelligence multipliers and intelligence diminishers. This isn't a general book on leadership with all the good qualities on one side and all the bad qualities on the other. It is more precise than that, identifying and illustrating only the five most differentiated disciplines. Third, I really like this book because of its range of motion. This book names a phenomena the way Malcolm Gladwell seems to be able to, but also goes down several layers to provide practical insight into exactly how to lead like a multiplier. Fourth, for the way the book seamlessly combines cutting-edge insight with timeless principles. Many books do one or the other. Few do both. This book will relate to your life today and will connect to your conscience as well. An idea whose time has come. Liz Wiseman have written a book that is relevant to the entire world. Corporate executives will immediately see its relevance, but so will leaders in education, hospitals, foundations, nonprofits, entrepreneurial startups, healthcare systems, middle-sized businesses, and government at the local, state, and national levels. I believe this book is relevant to everyone from first-time managers to experienced, seasoned world leaders. This book comes to the world at a time when it is greatly needed, at a time when new demands insufficient resources, when CFOs and HR directors are surprisingly in sync about the need for an approach that better leverages current resources. The principles in this book will always be true, but in this economic climate, they will win in the marketplace of ideas. Their relevance will give life and attention that is well deserved. These are ideas that matter now. And as Victor Hugo once said, quote, "There's nothing more powerful than an idea whose time has come," unquote. I have a vision of thousands of leaders discovering they have unintentionally diminished the people around them and taking steps towards becoming a multiplier. I have a vision of schools with diminishing cultures being reinvented around multiplier principles to the benefit of the whole community. I have a vision of world leaders learning how to better access the intelligence and capabilities of those they serve to address some of the world's toughest challenges. And so I challenge you to recognize the opportunity that is in your hands. Don't just read this book. Pay the price to really become a multiplier. Don't let this become a buzzword in your organization. Use the principles to reinvent your organization towards a true multiplying culture that gets more out of people than they know how to give. Choose to be a multiplier to people around you, as the president to me in England all those years ago. I have great confidence in the good that can come from such an approach to leadership in your team and in your entire organization. Just imagine what would happen to our world if every leader on the planet took one step from diminisher to becoming a multiplier. It can be done. Stephen R. Covey. Chapter 1, The Multiplier Effect. It has been said that after meeting with the great British Prime Minister William Ewart Gladstone, you left feeling he was the smartest person in the world. But after meeting with his rival, Benjamin Disraeli, you were thinking you were the smartest person. Bono. During the summer of 1987, Gabriel Oz, like virtually all of his peers, entered the army as part of the national military obligation of Israeli citizens to serve in a combat unit. Gabriel, a smart, confident 18-year-old with a boisterous laugh, was selected for tank commander instruction, was sent to the Golan Heights for basic training. After 6 months of training, Gabriel and six of his peers were selected out of the basic training for special assignment. There was an urgent need for soldiers to patrol the six-mile-deep belt along the border between Lebanon and Israel. In lieu of completing the remaining 3 months of basic training, these young soldiers were deployed to Lebanon and would soon experience real combat conditions. Gabriel and his peers faced a complex and chaotic set of battle conditions as they woke the next day in the field to the sound of gunfire and bombs. Under these intense circumstances, Gabriel worked well with his commanders and was considered a star for his intelligence and his ability to surmise situations quickly and accurately. After 3 months of real-world experience, with 10 times the amount of in-tank hours that their peers had received in basic training, Gabriel and his fellow soldiers returned to their class in the south of Israel just as the class completed basic training. As they entered the more advanced tank commander training, they experienced a change of command and were assigned to serve under a new commanding officer, Yuval. Yuval was considered to be the cream of the crop, the top 0.1% of talent, and had been fast-tracked through basic training after having left his elite pilot training program due to a medical issue. He was an intelligent and highly skilled tank commander who had just received officer status, but it appeared he still had a reputation to build and something to prove, to Gabriel in particular. Yuval had a superior knowledge of tank operations and flaunted it as if competing with Gabriel's battlefield savvy. During navigational exercises, Yuval publicly mocked Gabriel and his team's efforts when they failed to find all the designated waypoints. As the scrutiny of their performance continued, Gabriel and his team became less and less capable. Within a week, Gabriel was convinced he couldn't navigate at all. In a typical tank maneuver, the tank commander must observe the terrain, find the enemy, command the gunner, aim, shoot, hit the target, all in rapid succession, while being fired upon by the enemy. Hundreds of things are happening at once that need to be processed, prioritized, decided, and acted upon. Successful completion of these drills requires intense concentration and keen mental aptitude. These maneuvers are particularly intimidating because the commanding officer sits 10 inches above the tank commander's head in a special chair bolted to the top of the tank. Commanding officers watch every decision and take constant notes on clipboards attached to their thighs. Gabriel now performed these maneuvers under the wary inspection of Uval. In the training field, Gabriel didn't just perform poorly in one maneuver. He nearly failed every maneuver. He was stellar in the classroom. But every time he took command of the tank, while Yuval was mounted in the chair, he failed. As Yuval barked orders, controlled every detail, found every mistake, the tension mounted and mounted. Gabriel got tense, he couldn't think properly, he struggled to perform. The failure was so clear that Yuval recommended to the dismissal committee that Gabriel be ejected from the tank commander program. Protocol for dismissal required that Gabriel perform a maneuver under the supervision of the company commander, Lior, the highest-ranking officer in the program. Gabriel considered his fate if he failed officer training and returned to the battlefield with just the rank of a soldier. Gabriel's friends wished him luck in this, the most stressful of situations. The company commander took Gabriel out for his dismissal test, which consisted of a single maneuver, the Ringo, the most complex maneuver in the test suite. In the Ringo, nothing is scripted and conditions change constantly and unpredictably. Prior to entering the tank, the company commander stopped Gabriel at a model of the battlegrounds. Lior pointed out various aspects of the terrain and said, "Gabriel, what are we going to do here? And if the enemy moves here, how are you going to respond?" Lior was calm and inquisitive. Gabriel no longer felt like he was being tested. He felt like he was learning and working together with Lior to solve a challenge. With Lior now in the chair above him, Gabriel performed the most complex maneuver beautifully, perfectly even. As Gabriel completed the drill, Lior dismounted from the chair and said, "You are not dismissed." Gabriel continued with his tank commander training, performing the maneuvers under a different sergeant, all with stellar results. Lior placed Gabriel in the top 10% of the class and nominated him to go directly to an officer academy, where he again faced difficult navigational exercises. Interestingly, he found all the waypoints and consistently returned to the top of his class. Curiously, he had become a great navigator once again. Gabriel completed officer training and was asked to become a Gananan, Hebrew for a commanding officer who trains or cultivates other officers. He finished in time in the Israeli army as a major, and then went on to a successful career in technology, both in Israel and in the United States, where incidentally, he found his performance again rising and falling under leaders much like Yuval and Lior. Gabriel's army experience illustrates that often a change in command can cause a change in capability. Gabriel was smart and capable under one leader, but stupefied with fear under another. What did Yuval say and do that so diminished Gabriel's intelligence and capabilities? And what did Lior do that restored and expanded Gabriel's ability to reason and navigate complexity? Some leaders make us better and smarter. They bring out our intelligence. This book is about these leaders who access and revitalize the intelligence and the people around them. We call them multipliers. This book will show you why they create genius around them and make everyone smarter and more capable. Questioning genius. There are bird watchers and there are whale watchers. I'm a genius watcher. I am fascinated by the intelligence of others. I notice it. I study it. I have learned to identify a variety of different types of intelligence. The Oracle Corporation, the $22 billion software giant, was a great place for genius watching. In the 17 years I worked in senior management at Oracle, I was fortunate to work alongside many intelligent executives, all symmetrically recruited from the best companies and out of the elite universities as top performers. Because I worked as the vice president responsible for the company's global talent development strategy and ran the corporate university, I worked closely with those executives and had a front row seat to study their leadership. From this vantage point, I began to observe how they used their intelligence in different, very different ways, and I became intrigued by the effect that they had on people in their organizations. The problem with genius. Some leaders seem to drain intelligence and capabilities out of the people around them. They're focused on their own intelligence, and their resolve to be the smartest person in the room had a diminishing effect on everyone else. For them to look smart, other people had to end up looking dumb. We've all worked with these intellectual black holes. They create a vortex that sucks the energy out of everyone and everything around them. When they walk into a room, the shared IQ drops and the length of meeting doubles. In countless settings, these leaders are idea killers and energy destroyers. Other people's ideas suffocate and die in the presence, and the flow of intelligence comes to abrupt halts around them. Around these leaders, intelligence flowed only one way, from them to others. Other leaders used their intelligence in a fundamentally different way. They applied their intelligence to amplify the smarts and capabilities of the people around them. People get smarter and better in their presence. Ideas grow, challenges are summoned. Hard problems were solved. When the leaders walked into a room, light bulbs started going off in people's heads. Ideas flew so fast that you had to replay the meeting in slow motion to see what was really going on. Meetings with them were idea mashup sessions. These leaders seemed to make everyone around them better and more capable. These leaders were not just intelligent themselves, they were intelligence multipliers. Perhaps these leaders understood that the person sitting at the apex of the intelligence hierarchy is the genius maker, not the genius.
You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, 93.9 Cable FM in Burnaby. And you're listening to Future Talk with your host, Dr. Paul Tenary. We're now going to take a short break and listen to a very important public service announcement.
Every year, countless people succumb to the temptation to purchase exotic animals like hedgehogs, lizards, monkeys, even tigers and bears to keep as pets. But life in captivity is often a death sentence for these animals, who may suffer from malnutrition, an improper environment, and the stress of confinement. For more information on this issue, visit the BCSPCA website at www.spca.bc.ca.
Welcome back. You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, 93.9 Cable FM in Burnaby. And you are listening to Future Talk with your host, Dr. Paul Tenary, professional futurist.
Welcome back. We are looking at the book Multipliers, How the Best Leaders Make Everyone Smarter by Liz Wiseman. We're on the first chapter, The Multiplier Effect. Post-Oracle Therapy. The idea for this book emerged in my post-Oracle therapy. Leaving Oracle was like stepping off a high-speed bullet train and suddenly finding everything moving in slow motion. This sudden calm gave way to wonder about the lingering question: how do some leaders create intelligence around them while others diminish it? As I began teaching and coaching executives, I saw the same dynamic playing out to other companies. Some leaders seemed to boast and boost the collective in IQ, while others sucked the mental life out of their employees. I found myself working with highly intelligent executives who were struggling with their own tendency to either overtly or subtly shut down the people around them. I also worked with many senior leaders struggling to make better use of their resources. Most of these leaders had developed their leadership skills during times of growth. However, in more austere business climates, they found themselves unable to solve problems by simply throwing more resources at the problem. They needed to find ways to boost the productivity of the people they already had. I recall one particularly pivotal conversation with a client named Dennis Moore, a senior executive with a genius-level IQ. As we discussed how leaders can have an infectious effect on the intelligence in their organization and spark viral intelligence, he responded, "These leaders are like amplifiers. They are intelligence amplifiers." Yes, certain leaders amplify intelligence. These leaders, who we have come to call multipliers, create collective viral intelligence in organizations. Other leaders act as diminishers and deplete the organization of critical intelligence and capabilities. But what is it that these multipliers do? What is it that multipliers do differently than diminishers? Scouring business school journals and the internet, looking for answers to these questions, as well as for resources for clients, yielded only frustration. This void set the course for my research into this phenomena. I was determined to find answers for leaders wanting to multiply the intelligence of their organizations. The research. The first major discovery was finding the perfect research partner. Greg McKinnon was studying at Stanford University's Graduate School of Business. Greg, originally from London, England, had worked as both a management advisor and a leadership development analyst for global companies. Greg has a curious and tenacious mind and a passion for leadership that gave him my same measure of determination to find answers. After I convinced Greg to divert from a PhD program, we formalized our research effort and went to work. Greg brought vigor to our analyses and our debates and asked the hard questions as we wrote up our findings. He was focused on teaching and testing those ideas inside organizations, which had allowed me to teach and write, giving voice to the ideas I have observed and studied for many years. We began our formal research by defining the question that would consume us for the next 2 years. What are the vital few differences between intelligence diminishers and intelligence multipliers? And what impact do they have on organizations? Waking up for 730 days with the same question was like the movie Groundhog Day, in which Bill Murray wakes up each day to the same time and song on his alarm clock, destined to repeat the events of the previous day. In the singular and prolonged pursuit of this question, Greg and I began to develop a deep understanding of this multiplier effect. We began our research by selecting a set of companies and industries in which the individual and organizational intelligence provide a competitive advantage. Because these organizations rise or fall based on the strength of their intellectual assets, we assumed the multiplier effect would be pronounced. We interviewed senior professionals inside of organizations, asking them to identify two leaders, one who fit the description of a multiplier and one who fit the profile as a diminisher. We studied more than 150 of the resulting leaders through interviews and quantitative assessment of their leadership practices. For many leaders, we then followed an intensive 360-degree interview process with both former and current members of their management teams. As our research expanded, we studied additional leaders from other companies and industries, looking for common elements that span the business and nonprofit sectors as well as geographics. Our research journey took us across four continents and introduced us to an incredibly rich and diverse set of leaders. We came to know some of these leaders quite well, studying them and their organizations in great depth. Two of the leaders we studied provided a sharp contrast between the two leadership styles. They both worked for the same company and in the same role. One had the Midas touch of a multiplier, and the other had the chilling effect of a diminisher. A Tale of Two Managers. Vic Ram worked as an engineering manager under two different division managers at Intel. Each leader could be considered a genius. Both had a profound impact on Vic Ram. The first leader was George Schneer, who was a division manager for one of Intel's businesses. Manager number one, the Midas touch. George had a reputation for running successful businesses at Intel. Every business he ran was profitable and grew under his leadership. But what most distinguished George was the impact he had on the people around him. Vic Ram said, "I was a rock star around George. He made me. Because of him, I transitioned from an individual contributor to big-time manager. Around him, I felt like a smart SOB. Everyone felt like that. He got 100% out of me. It was exhilarating." George's team echoed the same sentiments. We are not sure exactly what George did, but we know we were smart and we were winning. Being on this team was the highlight of our careers. George grew people's intelligence by engaging it. He wasn't the center of attention and didn't worry about how smart he looked. What George worried about was extracting the smarts and maximum effect from each member of his team. In a typical meeting, he spoke only about 10% of the time, mostly just to crisp up the problem statement. He would then back away and give his team space to figure out an answer. Often, the ideas his team would generate were worth millions. George's team drove the business to achieve outstanding revenue growth and to deliver the profit bridge that allowed Intel to enter the microprocessor business. Manager number two, the idea killer. Several years later, Vic Ram moved out of George's group and went to work for a second division manager who has been the architect of one of the early microprocessors. This second manager was a brilliant scientist who had now been promoted into management to run the plant that produced the chips. He was highly intelligent by every measure and left his mark on everyone and everything around him. The problem was that the leader did all the thinking, Vic Ram said. He was very, very smart. But people had a way of shutting down around him. He just killed our ideas. In a typical team meeting, he did about 30% of the talking and left little space for others. He gave a lot of feedback. Most of it was about how bad our ideas were. This manager made all the decisions himself with a single confidant. He would then announce those decisions to the organization, Vic Ram said. You always knew he would have an answer for everything. He had really strong opinions and put his energy into selling his ideas to others and convincing them to execute on the details. No one else's opinion mattered. This manager hired intelligent people, but they soon realized that they didn't have permission to think for themselves. Eventually, they would quit or threaten to quit. Ultimately, Intel hired a second in command to work alongside the manager to counter the intelligence drain on the organization. But even then, Vic Ram said, my job was more like cranking than creating. He really only got from me about 50% of what I had to offer, and I would never work for him again. We're going to look at more onto the details of how to become a multiplier in your area of work, and so please stay tuned for future programs.
You have been listening to Future Talk on CJSF 90.1 FM on your dial, 93.9 Cable FM in Burnaby, and Future Talk is a weekly show on important issues that affect you and your future. And this is Dr. Tenari, professional futurist, reminding you that if you're not willing to make the effort to invent your own future, then others will be only too happy to invent it for you. See you next week.